What's going on, everybody? Happy Friday. It's Ross James here on another episode of Songs That Saved Me. I hope you all enjoyed our last episode with Dave Schools. And I also hope you guys checked out the Spotify playlist that we've got going on. You know, if you're interested in any of the songs that get talked about on this show on any of the episodes, you can go on to our Instagram page at Songs That Saved Me, which you should be following if you're not already. And you go ahead, click our link in the bio, and there'll be a link to take you to the Spotify playlist. From there, you can check out any of the tunes that we talk about here with any of our guests. Today on the program, we've got Victoria Reed. And she takes us through all the songs that, you know, really played a big role in her life. She grew up as the daughter of the saxophone player in Bob Seger's band, and talks a little bit about that, talks about where she is now, and even shares a really great performance of one of the songs on her new record, Aqua Madre, which I highly recommend. Beautiful songs and really interesting sounds on that record. Really, really cool colors that she paints with. So if you're digging the podcast, like I said, give us a follow at Songs That Saved Me on Instagram. Please leave us a review here in the Apple Podcast Store. And I hope you enjoy today's episode with Victoria Reed. Well, cool. Thanks so much for joining me today, Victoria. It's really good to meet you virtually like this.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, of course. How are you holding up?
Doing all right, you know? I mean, it's such a funny balance between feeling like just really freaked out and kind of devastated about everything that's going on, and then also, you know, feeling like, well, we're so far our families are doing okay, they're healthy, mm-hmm. we're, you know, we have a nice home here in Mexico City. We have a home studio, we have light, we have outdoor space, so we feel we feel like fortunate to be in the position that we're in, and also I think you know, we're just constantly traveling, so it's really rare that there's ever more than just 2 weeks even or 3 weeks at home, so kind of trying to just like take advantage of this time just as a space where we can kind of root down for once.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're married to, for those that don't know, Eric Deutsch. I'm saying his name right, correct?
It's Deutsch. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I always get nervous with that one. But yeah, and he still plays in Leftover Salmon. He's a keyboard player. And you and him made your newest record together. Is that right?
Yeah, it was between him and I and a producer from New York called Otronova.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Awesome. So, I mean, that's nice to have somebody to be able to make music with, I suppose, during this time, right? I mean, totally. A lot of us are trying to navigate the virtual stream and trying to, you know, play music with friends far away, but you've got somebody right there, so that must be nice.
Yeah, it's a perk for sure.
Well, I'd love to hear about some of the tunes that you thought of when you when we talked about having you on the podcast here. What was maybe one of the first tunes, sort of maybe like an earlier part of your life or something that you thought of as grabbing hold of you?
I mean, this one, I think especially, was very hard for me to choose because, you know, I have very early memories of being like, you know, 5 years old and literally being moved to the point of tears by like a Gin Blossom song, for example. I don't know. So music always kind of took a hold of me in pretty extreme ways.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really, it was so funny trying to think of this. I'm like, it really would come down to, I think if I'm thinking about the, you know, the very early years of my life, it would come down to like Spice Girls or Bob Seger, which are like totally two different, you know, totally two different universes, or maybe not. but yeah, ultimately, you know, my dad, he plays, he's played with Bob Seger since the 70s. He's his
no
saxophone
way, really?
Player. Yeah.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, so, you know, it's hard to think about you know, music in my childhood without, or like what was the most impactful without giving some credit to that. And it's interesting because they actually, they didn't tour. My dad didn't tour with him, or, you know, Seeger took a break for about maybe like 8 years, like just before I was born. So I didn't go to a show until I was actually 6 years old. I was always connected to the music, but yeah, so the song I chose was Against the Wind. It's, mm-hmm. again, kind of hard to even just pick one from Seeger alone.
Yeah.
but that one I can really remember. I mean, I can remember those first shows that I went to where I really had no idea what was really going on beforehand. Like I knew that like my dad was like kind of a thing in, you know, the music world. And I grew up in Detroit where like Seeger is everything, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, you go somewhere else and it's like, maybe people don't know as much, but you know, I kind of had an idea of what was going on. And I remember they did rehearsals before the tour at, I think it must've been the State Theater, which is now the Fillmore.
I wonder, because it's funny you mentioned Seeger. I grew up in Michigan too, and I
oh,
remember
really?
I did. I was like one of the house audio techs at Royal Oak Music Theater for some Seeger rehearsals. I don't even know when it would have been.
Oh my god, I was totally there in the 90s.
It would have been early 2000s.
Oh, later
I feel
on,
like
yeah.
It had been a minute since he'd been out on the road.
Uh huh. Yeah, that was probably like 2007 or 2006.
Yeah, that sounds
maybe.
That sounds right. Yeah, totally. Sorry,
oh, that's
just
awesome.
A little side
no,
note there.
I mean that's the thing about Michigan and Seeger. There's always always a connection.
It, yeah.
That's great. Yeah. So you know, I think they were doing rehearsals, I think, at the State Theater, which is now the Fillmore.
Mm-hmm.
And I just around that time, my parents had started taking us to our first concerts. I think I went to Smashing Pumpkins first,
nice.
And then, but that was also at the State Theater. So I think that's what, kind of like what my idea of what a concert was a theater of that size,
mm-hmm.
And then the first show came, and I don't even remember exactly where the first show was. I was about 6 or 7 years old, and it's in just this huge arena, and it was just like it was just crazy. It was just totally mind blowing. I'm like, whoa,
yeah.
My dad actually is pretty cool. but yeah, I just remember sitting on the side of the stage and those first shows that I ever went to, and always connecting with Against the Wind. Like it was, again, one of those songs that just sort of moved me to tears.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think part of what is so beautiful about Seeger and his music is really the lyricism is just so,
mm-hmm.
so deep. But also so relatable, you know, and yeah, there's just like a few lines from that song, you know, there's that wish I didn't know now,
yeah,
what I didn't know then, just things like that. It's just like so simple. You just can't even imagine how he came up with it. It's so simple. And so,
yeah.
But it's a sentiment that, you know, everyone in this world has probably felt.
Universal. Yeah.
Yeah. At some point in their life. So I think, you know, and growing up, my parents would really, they were always talking about him as a songwriter, and they were always, just like emphasizing the importance of that in music and the power of lyricism and all that. So, you know, that's definitely what got me going as a songwriter in the first place. And it's funny because when I think about that song there, I can really think about times in my life later in life where, you know, things where I was going through a really difficult time, or where I was just feeling a little lost or a little off course or a lot off course. And I have a distinct memory of hearing that song later in life. I don't know how old I was. Not that much later, you know, I was probably like in my late teens or early 20s, mm-hmm. in college. And just like being brought back, you know, being really connected to something really true and really sweet. So
yeah,
something about that song.
Yeah. I love when songs from, you know, your youth like that continue to play a role in your life and in different ways and kind of grow with you. You know, that's something that's so powerful. Like, I mean, as a 6-year-old, you're not really grasping the depth of the lyrics of the lyrics that you're talking about, you know, but you're being pulled to it by the vibe and the the picture that he's painting and the whole thing.
Yeah, and then the energy.
And then it just it takes on all these new meanings as you grow with it. It's so cool.
Yeah, songs. I think really good songs have the ability to really evolve over time and kind of shape shift. And there's like all these little treasures in there where you could listen to a great song. You could listen to, you know, hundreds of times, and you'll still kind of be able to find something new on maybe your 107th listen or something, you know?
that's what I love about these songs. That's so cool. Now, does your mom play too? You were talking about your mom emphasizing, you know, the songwriter element of Seeger. Is she a musician as well?
She is not. She was an actress and a model and a Playboy bunny. So she was very much in the show business world as well. But she was, she was right there alongside the whole ride. She was all up in there in the studio and you know, she was very much involved in the whole thing. So
would you go on tour or parts of the tour when your dad would be out with Seeger, or just certain shows kind of?
Yeah, I missed a lot of school that year. I think I found my diary. So I think I was in first grade, and I think I found my diary years back. Or not my diary. It was like something, a notebook for school or something. And like a lot of it was just like, my dad's on tour. Like I just got back from Atlanta. Dad's on tour. Gotta go. I'm going to be missing, you know, won't be at school next week. So I don't know how my parents finagled that, but
yeah.
It was first grade.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's great. I love that. So what's next? What's another tune that you thought of when you thought of this podcast? With some tunes that might carry some weight?
So another one, later on, I went to school in Chicago and studied philosophy there, ended up in a really pretty crazy place, probably the roughest or darkest place that I've ever been in my life, ultimately. And Van Morrison's Sweet Thing just happened to be my sort of guiding light through that time. I'm trying to think about how it played out. I think a really good friend at the time shared it with me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, it's really hard to think about my life in terms of like songs and, you know, the name of this podcast, Songs That Saved Me. I'm like, that was one that really kept me hanging on when I was feeling, pretty hopeless, I think, at times.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about hopeless. I'm a pretty hopeful person, but yeah, basically I was studying philosophy, going really, really deep into it. I was doing an independent study with the head of the philosophy department, like full throttle, and kind of simultaneously really going deeper into my spirituality and exploring those kinds of realms, and also simultaneously like going through really difficult just external kind of life stuff, and it all just kind of came to a head at a certain point. And it was such a massively important time in my life, because as difficult as it was, it was really what kind of pivoted my path towards pursuing my music, which, you know, I grew up writing songs from I can't even remember. It's hard for me to remember a time I wasn't writing songs in some capacity, and would kind of like pursue it here and there. But I never learned to play an instrument. So it was always kind of like collaborating with, you know, someone, you know, a producer that my parents would kind of set me up with in high school or, you know, and it just, I don't know, it never quite stuck. And yeah, right around that time, it was just like this really intense moment of like spiritual, existential crisis, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And really the only thing that made me feel better was writing my songs. And I had just recently around that time picked up a guitar that I always had and resolved to teach myself to learn to play it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that around that time, it was sort of it was really like music was the only thing that made me feel better. And so it was writing my songs, and I just played that Van Morrison Sweet Thing on repeat. And I honestly have not even gotten that deep into the meaning of the lyrics. And again, I think kind of like Seeger songs, they're in a way, they can kind of be about whatever you want them to be about.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, is this a love song? Is this a just a celebration of life? Is this a sad song? It's like, you know, it's almost, you almost can't even tell. But there was something so joyous about it and triumphant. And I really held on to it as almost like, okay, this is how I'm going to feel once I get through this difficult period. And this is how I'm going to feel like when I'm on the other side of it, that sort of thing. And do you know that song?
Yeah. I mean, I love that whole record. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it something that you had, you know, like heard plenty of times in your life before, but then in that moment, in that space that you were in, you kind of heard it in a new way? Or was it had you never really gone down that, like that rabbit hole before with that tune?
Yeah. You know what? I had not dug that deep into that record.
Uh-huh.
I didn't really know the song. And yeah, it's always exciting when there's a song like that out there, that for whatever reason, just like hasn't, you know, invaded your consciousness.
I know.
Yet.
I mean, that's what keeps me digging through crates of records all the time.
Totally. And it's kind of embarrassing because it's like, it's a pretty well-known record, but you know, I was 20, 21 at the time, still figuring it out.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, you know, it's like, I don't know. There's so many people that try to like, you know, play it cool. Like they've been listening to this stuff forever and ever. But I mean, yeah. it finds you when it finds you, you know, and there's no shame in that, you know.
totally. Yeah. So that song I give a lot of credit to, because it really, yeah, it was just like this little shining star for me that I could kind of tune into. And it was such an intense time. I wasn't even really, it sounds like I'm being dramatic, but I really wasn't even like experiencing music in the same way that I did before. It was really hard for me to connect with things in the same way for that period of time. That was, you know, probably about 6 months to a year. Yeah. And so anything that really like broke through, I would just turn up as loud as I possibly, as loud as I possibly could. And like, just feel it. And really, I think what one of the keys for me that came out of that, that whole period of time was just like, hey, with the philosophy, it was just like too much thinking, you know, like sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. And, and really it's like, it, if anything, it pushed me more towards like the Buddhist side of things, where it's like the harder or more intently you try to like intellectualize things, actually the farther away you move from the truth.
Yeah.
So I think that's, you know, that's another reason why I just like the music thing. It's like, just, I almost had to just remember how to feel. Mm-hmm. And so like with that song and then with writing songs myself and what I was doing with that, it really, I was able to tap into that, I think.
Yeah. Do you find that do you go back to that song in moments, you know, not the same moment, but in a similar moment where you're searching, or you know, you want to feel that way, do you sometimes go back to that tune, or does that, you know, do you find that song still these days?
Honestly, it's kind of one of those things where like when you have a song that like a really bad like ex-boyfriend or something first played for you, like it's hard to listen to.
Yeah.
And I feel like I have this weird relationship to it now, because like it reminds me, as much as it represented brightness, now it's kind of carries the charge of that time in a way that I like, I'm like, I can, there's plenty of songs out there. That one kind of served its purpose for me, I think.
Yeah. That's always fascinating too. Cause you know, when people talk about certain songs that follow them through their whole life or something like that, and then there's these tunes that, you know, they're everything and they're powerful and they're like, they're yours for that moment. But then, you know, they're kind of gone from your realm.
Through.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. The life of these songs, how they can be so different.
Yeah.
Well, I'd love to hear maybe about something more recent from you that has been a big part of your life lately.
Yeah, I mean, it's really again, it was so tricky for me to pick these songs. And what I kind of realized is like, as much as I'm like, well, is that weird to pick one of my own songs? But it's really, if I couldn't write my songs, I don't know what or who I would be. So it feels true that I would that maybe I would pick one, especially if, in
I
recent
love
times, of my own.
that.
Is that do pe have people done that on your
Yeah.
podcast
Yeah.
before?
You know,
Okay.
Krasno did that. Krasno picked a song that meant a lot to his family. And Nikki Bloom, who was on a little while ago, she
They're
picked a
great.
tune. Yeah. That, and I mean, I feel the same way about tunes that I've written. You know, they like,
Yeah.
you have to get that stuff out, you know?
Yeah, and you know, it's for me, songwriting has always been such just like a vital function of my being. It's like really how I process things. I never really set out to write a song thinking I'm gonna write a song. You know, like it's never like, oh, I should write a song, or I'm going to, or I want to. It's really like I need to write this song. So yeah, I think one that I wrote recently that I think really sort of encompasses a really kind of major piece of my journey in life and where I'm at now, and you know, kind of like crystallizes some life lessons learned that are really important to me, is off of my new record. It's called Heal Your Pain. And I wrote it, it's inspired by a type of therapy that I did called EMDR. Have you ever heard of it?
I actually have, yes. I'm
Have you done
fascinated.
it?
No, I've looked into it, and I can't wait to hear where this is going. Yeah,
I'm like, I would scream it from the rooftops.
that's what I've heard, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it's I always want to be like, I don't know, like when I talk about therapy and my experience with it, like I totally understand that it's, you know, it's I'm in a really privileged position that I was able to even go to therapy. And I know that not everyone has that option, but it's really something that I learned, just what I learned through therapy. For me, the overall lesson is like, whether it's therapy, whether it's, you know, reaching out to a friend, whether it's writing, you know, making art about it, I think like just the reaching out aspect is so important, so vital, that
Yeah.
that's, you know, I think so with EMDR therapy, I always forget what it actually stands for. It's one of those things where I'm really capable of overthinking things. And at the time that I decided to try this type of therapy, because a few it had kind of popped up in a few different ways, a few people suggesting it, I was like, I don't even want to read about it. I don't want to know anything because I know how my brain works, and I'll just be too busy like trying to figure it out to actually
Right.
just like reap the benefits of it. So my technical knowledge of what it's all about is not that deep. My experiential knowledge, however, is. So I found this incredible therapist just online on psychologytoday.com. And that was just such a total blessing because she actually happened to be kind of connected to I don't do you know Art Landy?
I don't know.
He's this incredible, just legendary jazz pianist who is my husband Eric's sort of mentor,
Okay.
and also like he married us, like he's kind of our spiritual
Oh,
mentor in
wow.
ways too.
Yeah.
Really deep guy. But anyway, she was kind of connected to him, but so it was like just enough degrees of separation that it was still okay, but also, you know, the whole thing felt very there's
Comfortable and
yeah, very comfortable, like very safe. But anyway, yeah, so EMDR, what you do is you sort of it's based on working with your left and your right brain and kind of working to make a connection. So the way that I did it was with these two little buzzers, and it sounds like electroshock therapy when I say that, but they're just like
right.
these two little circular, like it's the size of a quarter almost, little things that vibrate, and you put one under each hand, on top of each leg, either leg on your lap, and they vibrate alternating side to side. And you can kind of choose like the intensity of the vibration and how quickly they move back and forth based on what feels good. And the idea is you go back into traumatic experiences in your life. So things that have been, you know, trauma tends to kind of like get locked into our nervous systems in a way where like, then there's this sort of loop that we play in our brains where we just kind of can't get out of the loop. And that's when, you know, it's like, okay, I need some help with this. But, so what this type of therapy does is it sort of helps you to reprocess it, to go back into it from a safe and supported place with the therapist. You set up all these sort of resources, all these tools that you can call on should things get too intense, that kind of thing. And it's just amazing. It's like things that I, at the beginning of the therapy session, she would say, you know, what's on a scale of 1 to 10, like, what is the charge of talking about this? Like, how intense does it feel? And I would be like 15, like, it feels like I'm going to die if I talk about it. And by the end of the session, it's like, okay, what can you rate the charge? And it's like, 3, like, I don't know, like, I'd rather not talk about it. Like, it's not like my favorite subject, but yeah, so it's just amazing. So my experience with it, I mean, there were things that I just thought, there's no way that I could ever be in a place that felt good about this or healed or complete or like, you know, like I can move on. And what I learned is just like, damn, there's really, you can heal things that even when it feels just utterly unimaginable, healing is always possible. And I really believe that. And I've learned that just through that experience and so many other experiences that I've had, even just recently in life, times when it just seems like, no, there's no way. And then it's like, wow. And you come out just on the other side of it, even better for it. And
I mean, people get so scared to even face it like head on, you know, and then it just sort of compounds, you know, and it gets bigger and bigger. So being able to do that is fantastic. And I've been curious about the EMDR thing, you know, for a long time. I mean, the reprogramming sort of idea behind it almost. And you know, I've done, my fiance and I have done some of the sort of reparenting meditation kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm interested in that.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many interesting tools out there that are readily available, you know, and
totally
in a whole new way. And I hope that people are moving past some of the shame that prevents people from dealing with this kind of stuff, you know, and just people talking about it in general, I think is a good thing. So,
yeah. And honestly, that's what this song is about. It's about, you know, 'cause I think I went, you know, years kind of on my own thinking, therapy, I don't know, you know, and not that I felt shame about it, but I just felt like, who's going to be able to help me? Like, I don't know. There was this kind of thing, like, it's so intimate, you know what I mean? It's like finding a lover, you know what I mean? Or like,
the right balance. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's really, I don't know. I think that there's so many, there's not just one way for everyone. Like, I by no means think like EMDR is the way for everyone, or maybe it's reparenting, maybe it's just alt therapy, maybe, you know what I mean? There's so many different avenues. But yeah, I think this song is just really, I wrote it actually as a letter, I guess, or a message to my mom, to my grandmother, like, to, I kind of like imagined that, you know, for a lot of the, like, that generation and my parents' generation, my grandparents, and definitely beyond that, my ancestors, like, going to therapy was not really on the table. It was more so for my parents, but there was still, I think, a lot of misinformation about it, a lot of, you know, again, stigma, who knows.
Sure. Yeah.
But so in this song, I just kind of imagined that, you know, I was kind of going through and healing that sort of like ancestral pain, you know, going through the process that I would go through in therapy, which, you know, you kind of go back into it and you imagine like, okay, so in this really terrible moment where you had no choice, which is a lot of what, you know, trauma is about, is not having a choice, who could you have used in that moment? Like, what support could you have had? Like, wouldn't it have been amazing if, like, you could have had your therapist there, or your husband there, or Yeah, I don't know. So you just kind of go into it and imagine that, like, you kind of press pause and that someone who is able to support you is there.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of rewrite the script, and it sounds too good to be true, but somehow it works. And yeah, so in this song, I go back in and I imagine that I'm there, for my mom and, or for my grandmother, or even just for, I don't know. It's also very much about a lot of the trauma I think in our world is rooted in kind of like toxic, patriarchal energy, you know, and the effect that has not only on women, but on everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the type of pain that I'm referring to in that song. And just, I go through a little process of imagining what it would be like to kind of heal that for all of us. And just in writing that song, it felt, I don't know. I think coming from being in a place where just like doing my own work felt so like just desperately vital. It's pretty amazing now to be in a place where it's like, oh, now actually maybe I can share what I learned with other people. You know what I mean? And get to the next level.
I love that. I mean, I love how powerful that idea alone is, because I mean, I think, you know, a huge part of the pain that we all carry, I think, is ancestral pain, you know, whether or not mm-hmm. we're conscious of it, it's part of us, you know,
yeah.
whether it was a relative or a past life or something like that. There's pain that we haven't, you know, directly experienced maybe in this lifetime that is still something that we carry. At least I feel that way. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's too out there, but
I'm right there with you. So, you never have to worry about that with me.
Yeah. I mean, I really love this concept, and you know, thank you for sharing all that. And I'd love to hear you and Eric play it if you're up for it.
We would love to play it for you.
All right, let's hear it.
I'm not saying you're not doing well for someone who's been to hell and back. Can't you see that I just want to help, and I can understand that. Oh, some things they just don't go as you had hoped. But angel, I want you to. Oh,
Well, that was super cool, Victoria. I mean, so great to hear, you know, a little bit about your childhood and then how it's taken you to this point in your life and how powerful the songs that you've heard and the songs that you've written have been in your journey. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to chat with me today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really, really great to connect with you.
Yeah. I look forward to meeting you in real life, hopefully in the not too distant future. We can get back to some sort of semblance of normal and playing music out on the road a little bit.
Can't wait.
Tell Eric K from me, and I'll talk to you real soon.
I will. Thanks so much, Roz. Take care of yourself.
All right, you too.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed today's episode of Songs That Saved Me with Victoria Reed and that great performance of Heal Your Pain by her and Eric Deutsch. And that song's off her new record, Aqua Madre. Make sure you check it out. Next week, I've got the one and only Marcus King on the program, and I'm really excited about this episode. He plays three tunes from his house that are just killer, killer solo performances, not to be missed. And lots more great episodes coming up. So make sure you go give us a follow on Instagram at Songs That Save Me. Leave us a review here in the Apple Podcast Store and stay tuned for lots more to come on Songs That Save Me.